Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Volume 11, and this one specifically, we're back for Season 2 with a very, very special guest. I don't know if I can emphasize that enough, by the way. Thanks very much, Mr. Frank Gambale. We're here.
My pleasure.
To talk about music, and because you're this guest that I've been wanting to talk about so long, for those that are unaware, we tried to make it happen last season, and then he was in the process of moving, and I was also busy with a bunch of stuff. Well, didn't happen, but now it's definitely happening and we'll make it work really well, right? So to get started, it's always good to emphasize that it's a pleasure having you here. And I'd like to know a few of the things, and I also want you to be like perfectly comfortable with all the questions that I'm getting at, because I've gone through a few interviews of yours. I've been following you for a while. And
yeah,
I realize that people ask about the same questions, but there are some things in some of those questions that are not necessarily explored as much as I'd like to. And you know one that I would like to start out with?
Good. I'm glad. I'm very happy to hear that, actually.
Yeah.
So if people watch my interviews, they're going to hear the same answers all the time.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's always good to do something different, for God's sake.
Yeah. Okay. So you're going to like this.
What made you start playing guitar?
Oh, no. You know? Don't worry.
None of those, right?
Yeah, don't worry. Let me tell you a very, very interesting one that goes like this.
You hope I can answer.
Yep. I'm going to say some names, and I'm definitely going to ring a bell or two in your mind. So some Brazilian guys like Nelson Faria and Genil Castro, and your time with some other colleagues that were guitar legends. Unfortunately, some of them have passed away. So Joe Diorio and Joe Pass, amongst many others. And that was a time where you were present at the GIT, Guitar Institute of Technology. I'd like you not only to tell you about what you remember about that time, but I feel like looking from afar, not only geolocation wise, but time wise as well, it also feels like another universe of guitar study, of you know, inspiration. What can you tell us about all that time and also all those names I told you about?
Well, you know, when I arrived, it was in September of 1982 in America, and I had just come over from Australia, a young kid. I was 22 years old, and you know, to me, it was an opportunity for me to not only meet a lot of people, but I really wanted to go to America because my favorite music was coming out of America. You know, Chick was recording here, Chick Corea. There was a lot of great music in this area in LA at that time. And GIT, believe it or not, was a good excuse to be able to stay in the country for a whole year. Because as a tourist, you could only stay for 6 months.
I see.
So I wanted to be able to stay for a whole year at least. And then I could stay an extra 6 months as a tourist after the 1 year course.
I see.
So it gave me a good opportunity, a good period of time that I could explore the possibilities of being there. And, you know, guitar was hot at that point. There were a lot of great guitar players. You know, guitar, that was almost like the peak of the guitar period. You know, there was a lot of great guitar playing going on in all genres. It wasn't just the jazz or fusion thing. And there were a lot of discoveries. You know, Eddie Van Halen was doing his tap thing. That was new.
Yeah.
And I came along with the sweep, and that was new, you know, and there was a lot of new stuff happening. There's still, you know, guitar is constantly evolving, but there seemed to be a spike at that point. And, you know, my sweep picking was already quite well developed by the time I got to GIT, because I had started really doing it when I was about 13.
I see.
So when I got there, you know, it was just a lovely time for me to meet people and to practice more.
I see.
And
not necessarily like business opportunities. Maybe you had that in the back of your mind, but above all, study, practice, get better still. At the age of 22?
Well, yeah, actually, there were opportunities that came. In fact, I can draw a direct line from GIT to Chick Corea.
Really?
And I'll get to that. But, you know, for me, because I was, my playing was so bizarre to everybody at that time, because the sweep was truly mind-boggling back then. Now it's a whole other world, but can you imagine when sweep was new? People were hearing me for the first time, thinking I had just landed from Mars or somewhere, you know?
Yep.
Because it was so left field that, you know, they went, what is this? You know, people couldn't imagine how it was done.
Yep.
If they were only listening to it, they just, and even when I did my sweep picking video, even when I was watching it, I went, this looks wild, man. All these notes are coming out.
Am I really playing them right? Am I really playing them?
Is he really? He's just going la, 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 la.
That's amazing. That's really one of the amazing things about sweep is that your left hand is going crazy, of course, but your right hand is just up and down.
You know, la, 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 la.
Yep.
Yeah, it's at the, I always say it's under a palm tree at the beach, you know, sipping a pina colada. My right hand is like on holiday. But it's not really.
No, of course not. We're joking. You know, just to make that clear to people that are listening, we are joking.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wrote a book, the first book on the subject, called Speed Picking, because I wasn't able to use the sweep picking name. Publishers said, nobody's going to know what the book is about. Nobody's ever heard of sweep picking.
I see.
So we called it Speed Picking. I wrote, before it was ever published, I just hand wrote my first copy because other students kept coming up to me going, hey, man, how do you do that? Show me how you do that. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah.
So I was constantly being interrupted. I said, so I made like 30 copies, photocopies. And so when somebody would ask, I'd go, here, take a, this is how I do it. Now let me practice, you know? And there was a lot of great musicianship there at the school at the time, you know. You know, Joe DiOrio, of course, was an amazing influence. He kind of did a little bit of sweeping, too. A lot of people kind of did it this much.
I see.
But nobody took it to the moon like I did, you know.
So more like economy picking, right, than sweep necessarily?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see.
It's the same thing. I mean, it's just two different terms for the same thing. Economy picking because it's less movement. You know, I can do an arpeggio. I'll give it a quick demonstration. If I'm going, I'm only picking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times.
Yeah.
So that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 notes.
Yeah.
Under normal circumstances.
Yep, yep.
So, you know, it's dramatically efficient, is what I always say. It's like a BMW in sixth or seventh gear. You're going really fast, but this car feels like you're standing still.
Yeah, you know? Like at the end of the day, it's like once you get the hang of it, is it really that? Are you putting in that much effort? You know, of course you need to put the effort to get there. That's like undeniable. You have to sit down, get all your practice straight properly, of course. And then once you get there, it's like, I imagine it's like heaven because the notes will come naturally, right?
It truly is. Truly is a beautiful technique. You know, but I never put the technique before the music. To me, the music comes first.
Yes.
And in fact, the technique developed because I wanted to follow and pursue musical ideas. And so the technique follows, you know. Yeah. So that's really important to remember. And there's all kinds of sweeps, too. I mean, sweeps, to me, a lot of people miss the subtleties of two-string sweeps.
Yes.
I do a lot of stuff on two strings that is very economical and three strings a lot. So those internal smaller sweeps are really where the fun is.
Yeah, yeah. And in a way, I feel like that's a bit of the different direction you took sweep compared to more of the modern metal guys that would go all over the place with the fretboard. You don't feel that need. You're like constantly going to the changes and then you're changing one note in this set of three or two strings, right? And then it goes back and forth. And then because you're constantly changing, it's like that's enough for you. And I feel like that's so crazy because it's not like you're setting your sweep mode on, and then all you are going to do for a long while is sweep, sweep, sweep until you go back to your normal plane, let's say, per se, you're like, wow, mm-hmm. I'm playing normally, and then I'm going to just tag in a little sweep because I feel like this musical idea makes sense, you know? But I'm not necessarily going to show people, hey, did you check out my sweep? How it's amazing and how I'm able to play hella fast, and it's like I go crazy all over the board. No, it's more the musical idea than the technical prowess, exactly. Right?
Well, that's exactly what I said. You know, I never put the technique before the music.
So, question for you, by the way, how do you feel when someone comes up to you and asks for you immediately about the technique without even wanting to know the musical purpose? Because if back in your day you wanted to get the music first, and because you wanted to get the music, you had to go through a technique. How do you feel when people invert that order?
Well, you know, it's people are going to interpret it the way they want, and they're going to take what they want. And people did. They took the technique and they did what they wanted to do with it. Because, you know, it's a free country. It's a free world. It's still
perfect. Perfect.
You can do what you want to do with it. But for me, I'm not trying to show off or do anything silly. You know, to me, music is very serious business. I'm very clear that the art of music and being musical is the most important thing, you know. I do go into my sweep mode, but that's, you know, it's at the peak of a solo to give it the intensity that is needed at the end. You know, it really depends on the moment and the music. But, you know, yeah. People often talk to me about my technique. You're absolutely right. They go straight for that. Hardly anyone talks about my actual music and my albums and all the compositions. To me, that's a huge part of what I do is composition and writing music. Yes. To me, a melody is divine.
Yes.
It's you know, absolutely important. Music is not just about sport or how fast you can play or, you know, the typical, you know, I am mature about what I do and how I use the technique in a musical way. I mean, you know, this is purely, and the point I'll make here is purely it's the mind of guitar players that have this issue. If you, for example, step out of your guitar player mind and think, what does a saxophone player hear when you play? What did Chick Corea hear when I played?
I see.
He doesn't know anything about technique of guitar and doesn't care either.
Yep.
Doesn't care.
Yep, they're hearing really the notes, not the technique, right?
There's the point. It's the notes, not the technique. So to me, that's the most important ingredient. It's what you play, not how. And so if you stay focused in that area, then you're going to get a musical result, usually.
Usually, that's a great caveat. And that's so great. That's so great because I can imagine the mind of a saxophone player, let's say like Michael Brecker. He goes into his improvs and his solos. He's thinking not only of what notes he's going to play, he's thinking of how he's going to play. He's thinking, compared to what he played before and what he's going to play after, he's thinking, how's that going to relate? The note he's about to play, he's going to take all that into consideration. He's going to take into consideration the musical context of the under instruments, at what part of the solo, what part of the song he is. So it's like, that's when you want to get into the mind of someone that is appreciating like their limitations. Let's say, because if you're a saxophonist, you're going to play melodies, of course. So the guy is going to play melodies like no one else because that's all he does for a living. But it's really valuable for we guitarists to get into that kind of mind state, because if we're too busy thinking that those things aren't as worthy of fast solos or complicated harmony and chords and changes, then it's like, why aren't we taking advantage of one of our prowesses, possible prowesses, right, that we can get through our instrument?
And it comes down to maturity, I think, you know. And I will say that, you know, you talked about, you know, what Michael Brecker's going to think and what he's going to play next. To me, and I'm pretty sure this is true of most great improvisers, is they don't think when they play. It's purely spontaneous. Yep. If you're thinking, you're in your left brain, and you're, you know, that could be shopping lists and numbers, and the inspirational side is the right side.
Yep.
I'm in my left brain when I'm practicing at home in my studio. When I'm performing, and would be true of these other great guys, great musicians too, is that you're improvising truly, spontaneously. So you do the preparation, the mechanics in your left brain, and then you let it go when you're performing, and you're very much in your right brain in performance, right?
Yep,
that's just to clarify that point.
My term definitely could have been more precise. What would Michael Brecker feel, not think, right? And
one of the greatest players. I got the pleasure of working with him a couple of times with Chick Corea. He would sit in with us, I always tried to take a solo before him.
I don't want to be the guy that improvises after him, right? right after him? No, thank you. Not me, please. So speaking about saxophonists and maybe going to the piano world as well, because you played piano since you were very young, and like it or not, because you delve so deep into that instrument, you also have a pianist mindset, even though that hasn't been your main instrument, especially up front, right, towards your public image. But how would you say going through those different maybe like prisms of music and life and, you know, emotion, how would you say that changed going back to your own musicality and your guitar playing, right?
Well, you know, to me, what drew me to the piano in the first place when I was 17, after 10 years on the guitar, was that I was frustrated with the physical, limitations of some of the chords I could play on guitar.
Okay.
I love clusters and close voicings, and they were essentially available only in a few places or certain things on guitars, maybe with an open string or something like that.
Or maybe between third and second string, because you have a third instead of a fourth, right? Some really nuanced situations.
Where you can get half steps and whole steps in your chord voicing.
Yep.
I couldn't do it with guitar. But with piano, I could just,
lay your hands.
I could get cluster chords, no problem.
Yeah.
So I was very inspired. I just wanted to hear those notes together, with a guitar. Although I do have a tuning now that I invented. I don't know if you know about
it. Yep, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
That resulted 40 years later, right? In something very practical in your life.
Yeah, I wish it had come earlier. I might not have even picked up the piano at all because of the possibilities with that tuning.
Was it musically defining and game-changing for you, like the tuning?
Absolutely. It meant that I could play the chords I wanted to hear on the guitar.
Great.
So I didn't have to resort to the piano, although I still adore the piano and keyboards. I have synthesizers and a grand piano, and I love this. I love to compose on a piano, because of the facility and the bass and the chord and the melody. And I play both instruments pretty much, but a guitar is my main instrument. I tend to write more complex music on the guitar than I do on the piano because I don't have the same kind of facility on the piano. So that's usually the difference,
Yep. That sounds great. And, that's so crazy, because when I stop to reflect about it, it's like those clusters you're talking about, many guitarists might say and maybe even die through and go through their whole musical and life journey without hearing them properly, because maybe they're so focused in their own instrument and not having the chance of like experiencing this new avenue of sounds of because it's like, the guitar is not made for that. It's made for many things, but definitely not for that. And if you're the guy that is able to hear that, because since you were very young, you played the piano, that's a game changer. That makes Gambale, and that's like, that sounds so great, because it's not the same thing. It's like, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain. It's like you go through an experience that makes you different without you even trying to be different. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the most authentic types of being different. Not being different for being different's sake, you know? It's like because I went through a specific experience in my life, it made me different and I'm not trying to be anyone else. I think that's amazing.
Well, you know, when I discovered the tuning, I was really beside myself because it seems so obvious now in retrospect, as it is with any kind of invention.
Yep.
And it was the same for sweep. Once people saw that it was possible,
yep,
they went, oh, yeah, of course, yeah, you know. but that's all well and good when you see someone do it and you go, oh, yeah, why didn't anybody do it before like this, you know? Yes. But being the inventor or the person that actually does make that big step, could be a little step, but it's still considered a big step, that's much harder to achieve. So I did it once with the sweep. So I feel like I've done it a second time with this tuning because this tuning is truly spectacular, in my opinion.
Yes.
And I think it could also be another standard tuning for guitar. There are lots of open tunings for guitar. And for me, the problem with the other open tunings, which I did explore a little bit, but for me, it was too much work involved. I could maybe find something by accident, but all the fingerings are different. You know, once you start tuning the strings differently,
it becomes a new instrument, right, in a way.
It's like starting over. Yep, yeah, yep. You can't really play it with the same level of confidence and relaxed standard tuning.
Yep.
So, but putting strings in a different octave, that's the key, you see. And when I realized that, I said, what an idiot I've been.
Of course, you
put it in a different octave. So having what would be a wound B string that is actually a D string tuned up to E.
Okay.
It's pretty strange.
Okay.
And then the high string is a G.
Okay.
That's tuned up to a G string tuned up to A. And the low string, it's like having the notes of the fifth fret capo on a regular guitar.
Oh, I see. Yep.
So the low string is A, D, G, C. And then the first two are down an octave from where they would normally be. You can hear them go down. Right?
Yeah.
What it enables is these kind of voicings. I can add the second anywhere. I can take a triad. 1, 2, 3, 5. Can't do those chords on guitar.
Yeah, and I see that because of that tuning, your hand isn't suffering, right? You're not having to tear your flesh apart.
Exactly. One of my favorite chords is this 13th chord, and I use it on keyboard all the time.
It's the
same as if you had the 6 and the flat 7. And the second and the third together, those four notes together.
Yep.
But it just looks like a regular 13th voicing.
Yep.
I can play them anywhere.
Yep. Ooh.
Just beautiful.
Ooh, I like that.
You could never play.
Oh my, I like that. I really like that. Oh yeah. Sounds like a harp in a way.
Well, it's still a guitar.
Yeah.
You know. And it's just like, it is like a new instrument,
yeah.
But I can play any chord I want to play. You know, when you play a minor chord, right? You can't normally add the second as well. I showed you major.
Yeah, yeah.
You can never get those notes together on a guitar. Mm. Yeah. You know, I could go on and on.
Wow, that sounds great. That sounds great.
I mean, it's endless.
Like it's endless. I hear that, and I think guitar because of the timbre only, you know? But if it wasn't for the guitar timbre, I would definitely visualize your hand laying slowly through a piano keyboard, you know? And like, that sounds amazing. That sounds great. That sounds great.
I love it. I love it because it's so endless. Play any chord, right?
Yep. Yep, that sounds great. So for those that are unaware, this is the Gambale tuning, right?
I call it Gambale tuning, yeah.
Great.
And to me it was a huge discovery. Wow. And I honestly sincerely think you know, people are starting to catch on to it now. You know, it takes people a long time to catch up. I figured this out in 2003, so it's already been around for 20 years.
That's great. That's really great. And it must be so satisfying to become an inventor of something that is practical, right? Because let's say you invented something that is like, wow, you're going to use it like once in a lifetime, you know, then what's the real use of that, right? But you recorded, if I'm not wrong, like 8 or 9 songs in an album of yours.
Yes, raison d'être.
Yep, perfectly. I was holding myself to the pronunciation. I wanted you to pronounce it first because I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's French.
Yep. What does it mean again? It
means reason to be.
Reason to
be. I always go, well, guitar is my reason to be.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I'm here.
Yep.
Raison d'être is the French word for it, but we say a reason to be. It's not as... I love French has a lot of words.
It's one of those terms that is not translatable, right? You have to couple
up. Well, it is, but not in the same beauty.
I see. For example, you've been to Brazil a few times. Have you ever heard of the word?
Lots of times.
Yeah, I know that. I'm saying, if you just to, you know, not,
lots of times.
Not to be like, come on, you're practically a Brazilian. But have you heard of the word saudade? Does that ring a bell?
Saudade, yes, of course.
And it's so cool because it means like, it's kind of like you miss someone, but...
Yeah, longing.
Yeah, that's the word I was searching for.
Saudade.
But it's a more usual expression than longing, specifically, because longing, yeah. it's something too profound in a way, you know, and kind of sad, kind of, you know? But saudade is like an... kind of optimistic, like a nice, bittersweet feel of, I miss that person, you know? So it's a cool expression, a really cool Brazilian expression.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, I wanted to show one more thing about this tuning.
Yeah, please.
See, what really blew my mind about it was because when you change the octave, anybody can pick it up and play like a regular guitar.
Oh.
All the normal chords are still there. That still comes out as a major triad. It looks like a D chord shape.
Yep.
It's actually, because it's up a fourth, the tuning starts at A, so it's actually a...
Okay.
Well, instead of a D, it's a G chord.
Yep, yep.
In concert pitch. But it's still a triad. And anybody can pick it up. But there's a million new voices, you know, that you can find.
That is great. That's great.
Anybody can play it right away, and I put it into the hands of really good players, and I go, "Hey, check this out. Just sit with it for a minute." And they go,
"Yep, yep,
Yeah. Oh, I just like to watch the light bulb go on, you know. You know, yeah. It's great. And it happens so cool. Every time.
That
you
is
know,
so
it's
cool.
Really, really great.
I am definitely going to try that out. That's the little push I needed, you know, to get started with that, because it's like, oh my God, I need to study so many things, but this one is worth trying.
Well, it's just a tuning, you know, and it'll inspire songs. It really will.
Right,
inspires a lot of songs for me.
Yep.
You know, I use it even on my latest record. I have songs that I wrote because of that tuning.
Cool. That's so cool. And and you're lucky today in a way, because our audience is like mainly musicians and people that are interested in this specific content. You know, it's like maybe in a normal place, a normal interview, or you go and then you play your guitar and you're like chords and chords and chords. And then most people would be like, oh, is there anything new about that? Wow, more chords. No, it's like we're the guys that are like, you know, buddies of mine and people that help spread the word to other musicians that are like, as soon as they hear that and they see how cool it is, it's like, I got to put that to the test, you know, I gotta make that mine.
Yeah.
And
take one of your guitars and string it up that way and you'll be blown out. I tell you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And one of the coolest things about that kind of invention is that, like, I kind of hinted it before, but it in other ways, it also makes you unique. So it's like, I'm the guitar player that can have these sounds. And sure, you can try, but I was the guy that started it. So if you're going to use my tuning, like, not in a condescending way by any means, but if you're going to use the tuning, in a way, you're kind of paying homage to myself, you know?
I've heard guitar for, you know, 55 years. Yep. And, you know, at that point, it was more like 35 years when I discovered it.
Okay.
You know?
Wow.
I'd been playing that long. And, you know, I've played every chord. I mean, you know, I've you know, not that there's no more possibilities on the regular tuning or guitar.
Yeah.
But what it did was just gave me this it was like a fresh start.
Yeah.
It took what I already know and it just blossoms because of all the new possibilities that it opens up. It's just like as though, oh boy, suddenly I've got three extra strings that I never had before.
Yeah, And by the way, you know what's interesting about that? Have you heard of, like, how aware are you of the Polyphia guys nowadays? And that aesthetic of like, have you heard of the band called Polyphia and some more modern, they're metal, but like
all the strings, extra strings, you mean?
What they do is the following. It's like there are some guys that are absurdly talented and technical, and lots of them, fortunately, because I used to, you know, like not be too into it when it was just technique, but they're becoming more and more and more musical as time goes by.
Oh,
and it's so inspiring. It's like 30-year-old guys that, because they're exploring the guitar in a new way, it makes it sound a different instrument. But I also have to tell you the con related to that it's because,
well, what are they doing first that's different?
Okay, let's get
you
started.
Say they're approaching it in a different way. Well, what's different?
So what they do is the following. They mix a lot of techniques, and with that sometimes they'll start arpeggiating maybe like a chord and then complement it with tapping at the points and combine it with harmonics and rhythms that are similar to like trap and hip hop, and some syncopations, and like it's all over the place. So you can imagine how messy that can be if they don't do it right. You're like, wow, what's this noise? You know, it's like, what am I even hearing? It's so weird to understand. Okay, but once they get like the formula right, let's say it's formula, but of course every song has to have its individuality and uniqueness. But once they get it right, it's like the techniques are all there for a reason, and it sounds so great because it's like, is this a guitar? It sounds like Steve Vai did a guest solo on one of their works, and because these guys they're really young and they're making these crazy out there sounds, Steve Vai probably also felt the need to make his solo different from anything he had done before up until that point, because he's not gonna come as a guy, a guitarist of the 80s, of the 90s, playing his same old stuff and like a fresh new influence, kind of modern metal and experimental stuff going on, and be like, oh no, this is Steve Vai. No, I haven't talked to him, but I imagine he felt he had the need to adapt. He felt the need to adapt. And because of that.
Well, you know, it really depends on your environment. You're going to, you know, you're inspired by whatever you're hearing. So you try to match it or go to the same mindset.
Yeah, and I think just to be clear, I think he did something in between. He was still Steve Vai. You could hear him in his expression out of this world. Of course, we all know that. But you could also see he was trying like different combinations, you know. And it's like if it was his own solo and his own work, maybe he would go in a different direction. But it was like a really interesting. By the way, highly recommend you listen to, for example, this song in specific. And by the way, one of the reasons that I was talking about that is like, sure, it's really new. I don't know the pronunciation, like avant-garde, it's something like that, right? Of like the people that are...
Yep. What's it called again? Polyphonia?
Polyphia. Yep.
Hey, I'll check it out.
Check it out. It's really avant-garde, but unfortunately, the downside compared to your tuning is that you need to play guitar absurdly well to get that going, you know? Yours, it's like you can give it almost to a beginner, an amateur, and they're gonna go their own way to explore their own sounds. So that's why I started with like that hook. That's where it was going. And I don't know if I'm like stepping into unknown territory, but I feel like that's a little bit of your reflecting a little bit on the history of you as a instructional video and book producer, creator, artist, you know, like writer and teacher, because you
educator,
of course, all that. You taught at GIT, you did many books and many videos, some of which, by the way, here at Chop Builder specifically.
Yeah, dude,
you're amazing. Popular. Exactly. You're amazingly influential here in Brasilia, for example, at our main music school. It's called like Escola de Música, like School of Music of Brasilia, right? And it's like they offer with many of the best teachers in town, like in the whole city, the best content. And like for you to get started in the guitar, one of the things that we're given is like the Chop Builder. And I was watching my friend the other day revisiting your what was that, like 80s, maybe end of 80s, beginning of 90s, something
like
that.
I think it was the early 90s.
Early 90s.
That was like my third video. I think it was around the Passages time. So actually it was around 94, actually, because...
You had a Passages song at the intro, I remember.
Yeah, and it's that guitar too, which was Passages, period.
Yeah.
94.
Dude, and the aesthetic is so crazy. Like it's so you can tell it's like a different era, because you remember how you had the bikini bottoms, the round one, and that was so hilarious.
Yeah, well, that's what they have at sports, you know, the boxing matches.
Yep,
they
UFCs
bring the girls
of the world,
on
right.
Round one, round two. And there was a friend of mine who had a dance school in LA, and I said, "Hey, you know, guys, not going to want to look at me for an hour, you know. Now let's spice it up a little bit. Do you guys want to be in a video and bring a couple of your friends?"
Yep.
You know? And I said, "Oh yeah, sure."
Yeah, you're so, like maybe the kids nowadays are going to start to play guitar if I
show them. It was just fun, a little bit of fun.
Yep.
And we have them there holding my guitar.
Yes, at the backyard, really, right? That was so funny. Yeah, I could just imagine the cool vibes of being like, well, I'm going to find a friend and rent his house for like a weekend so we can do some takes for this. And, you know, and at the same time that we're teaching some really serious and important, like really, really groundbreaking, like guitar chops and things that will make musicians like go to the next level, we're also going to put some quirks at the time. And
let's make it fun, you know. Music should be fun, you know.
Yep.
If you don't love what you're doing and you're not having fun, then you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I love
we
that.
Do this, we play guitar, we don't work guitar,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
Play. We're playing, you know.
Yes,
it's a very different
word,
you know, to think about.
And because I know English, that's some of the things. I don't know how it's in Spanish, for example. But one of the things I don't like about the term play guitar in Portuguese or any instrument is that it's tocar. It's like touch, you know?
Okay, you touch guitar.
Yeah, and it's like, it's so uninspiring, you know? It's like, I don't know. And then as I tell
I'm
sometimes...
doing more than just touching.
Of course,
I'm doing a lot more than just touching.
Yep.
And then play, it's kind of jogar in Italian.
Jogar, yeah. Same in Portuguese. Jogar, right? Play. Jogar.
Yeah.
And then
jogar
it's like... I try to explain to a few friends like how the connotation in English is so cool. It's like, look at it from another lens. We say play in English. It's like, vamos brincar, vamos jogar, vamos
jogar.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
vamos.
Yes.
I'm a sugar.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
jogar also, other than play, also means like throw. So maybe if you said, eu jogo guitarra, it's like, I'm going to throw my guitar.
Yeah. Out the window.
Yep. Yeah, that's, maybe it's not a coincidence. That's the feeling we have sometimes, right?
Sometimes you want to. I've been at that point a couple of times, you know. We all get discouraged, you know, sometimes. You go, God. What am I going to do now?
This conversation.
We always come back.
True. We might want to break it in half, but we always are going to come back for sure.
Yep. You can't stay away for long.
Yep. One of the things I really wanted to ask you, it's like, what do you listen to and what have you listened through your life and how do you listen to it? And like, what do you feel? It's like, who is Frank Gambale listening to music?
Well, you know, I always say this is something that's chronological, you know, because when you're young, you listen to whatever you're listening to. But as you get a little bit older, your tastes change. And so you start to morph into listening to something else, right?
Okay.
So I could say, you know, a lot of people, when they quote me, they go, my early things was Hendrix and Clapton in the 60s. But when I was, when it was 1973, I discovered Chick and Return to Forever, and so that was huge. And I discovered Steely Dan, way more sophisticated than Hendrix and Clapton, for sure. You know, so as my tastes evolved, and then I heard the Brecca Brothers, and I heard Jean-Luc Ponty, and I heard Earth, Wind & Fire. I was into pop music, too, because, music that was popular. Yep. You know, I loved The Police. I could listen to those guitar chords all day long. The arrangements for Trio were absolutely brilliant.
Yep.
And I've been a Sting fan too when he went on and did his solo records with jazz musicians, you know, most of the time. So I've always had my toe in, my last two records are all vocal records. You know, there's some R&B style, there's some Steely Dan vibe. There's some bit of rock, bit of funk. It's taking all my musical influences. When I sit and write, I'm not trying to copy anyone. You know, I'm way past the point of copying anyone because I'm really into chords. Chord changes are a huge thing for me. I'll never forget when I first came to Brazil, just a fond story of Brazil. My first time there was in 1987, and we played the Free Jazz Festival, and there was Hermeto Pascoal, who's incredible to me. That guy is a wild
man. He's a wizard.
In fact, I saw him just recently live, not even 6 months ago, here in Barcelona. Which was great. I never saw him live since before, way back at that festival. But I also discovered when we were in Sao Paulo, we played Ibera Poeira to 80,000 people.
Oh.
That was incredible. That was an amazing day.
Other times, right? Let's just stick it at leave it at that other times.
That was incredible. But on the evening, we went into this giant club where Ivan Lins was playing.
Yes.
And I discovered his music and... Man, that guy's a genius, you know, the way he manipulates harmony. And what I loved was the Brazilians had this whole other way of moving chords.
Yeah.
And I was heavily influenced by that. You know, Hermeto has written some crazy music. I mean, absolutely crazy stuff. So unique and so original. And same with Ivan. And I'm so happy that they're well regarded and there's a lot of great other artists I could mention.
And it's funny, how they're both geniuses by the absolute meaning of the word, but they are also so different. It's like Ivan composes absurd things, making them sound simple, you know? Yeah. Like the Beatles did in many cases, like Jobim did back in the day.
The sense of melody, the melodies are beautiful, you know, no question. And the way he delivers them too is just perfect.
And it's like, I'm gonna be honest with you, something that, like, I'm so proud of being a Brazilian in many different ways, but one of the things that really disappoints me in many regards is when we don't give enough appreciation to all that value that our own people deliver to us.
Yeah. You
know? It's like, and then, like Ivan, dude, Ivan's like, of course, people that are a bit older and that follow his work like a long time ago, they'll know who Ivan is. But many guys my age, even if they're, I don't know, musicians, maybe they've kind of heard about him, or you'll see things like Paul McCartney going to watch him in, like, I don't know, whatever hall he decides to play, right? And and it's like, for Paul McCartney, he's Ivan Lins. But for many Brazilian artists, oh, it's Ivan Lins. Like, sometimes, like, I feel that's like something that...
Yeah, well, that's normal.
It is?
No.
I thought that was something of the Brazilian culture in many ways, unfortunately.
That happens all over the world, you know. A lot of people don't get the respect they deserve as musicians, but you know,
But they do internationally. That's the thing. They do internationally.
Well, no, Ivan does just fine in Brazil. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff. Yep. I follow his Instagram, and he's always doing these beautiful concerts.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm happy for him. He deserves everything he has, and and I'm sure he lives well.
Hell yeah.
The thing is, you know, as artists, we can't always be thinking of the commercial side of it, you know?
Yeah.
People used to say to me years ago, you know, when I was first on the scene, they go, man, why don't you, like, get in this rock band and then do that and then make all this money and then you can retire and do whatever you want? I mean, it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to live it and to be honest with yourself. To me, I didn't want to do that then, you know?
Yeah.
I just wanted to make my music. Yeah. I wanted to deliver what I wanted to present, which was very selfish of me at the time. But, you know, I'd have no regrets for having followed my own path.
Yeah,
you know, because as an artist, it's much harder to follow your own road than to try to be a puppet to the record company or whoever they want. You know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do, everybody's got an opinion. What you should be doing, you know, you have to be strong in your own brain and in your own desires to know what you want to do and what you must as an artist, you know. So, you know, I've always stayed true to the craft, to the music. To me, writing quality music is exactly what I've always wanted to do, and I've been successful enough, you know.
Yes.
There's a point where, you know, if you keep trying to better and better or make more and more and more, it's a trap, really. Mm. At some point, you have to say, I have enough. I've done enough. I am enough. You know,
yep.
I don't need more than what I have. I'm very happy where I am, you know?
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great.
Mm.
And I think it's funny because you say it sounds selfish when you go towards your own music direction, right? Like you're the way only you want to go, despite other people say you to go to other directions. But it's funny how I heard, I think it was a Steven Wilson interview of him saying that the best thing, I mean, of course, he's an incredible composer. So he's the guy that composes the craziest things. And he's the one that's saying that the best thing a composer can do is attend only to his selfish needs, you know? And it's like, because at the end of the day, I had a feeling that he was trying to say that people don't know what they want, you know? And then he was like, because you have an inner flame that is constantly changing and wanting to go somewhere else and like taunting you to make new things, if you follow that personal desire, it's almost like you can easily tell your public that this new desire of yours is is authentic? Because if you don't, if you just go towards the money, kind of like what you said, it's like people are sooner or later are going to realize it's not you, you know? And for a creative mind.
A lot of people succeed with that mindset. But it's, you know, it's can you live with yourself? Can you sleep at night? You know,
I
can sleep quite comfortably at night. Look, it's I'm glad I followed my own road.
Yeah,
and I really am.
I'm really
glad. proud of all my music, and you know, it's my legacy. It's what I'll leave behind is, and I'm still making music. I'm writing right now for another record. It's one of these energies that you have to do. You have to make music, even though, you know, there's not much of a return on albums these days with all the Spotify's and all that stuff. There's nothing in it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm glad I caught the tail end of the music business before computers, because, you know, albums used to sell and it used to be a viable business. Now I can't see it as a viable business in the old from making music.
Right.
But it's important to continue to make music because it keeps you current. It keeps you
relevant.
It keeps me motivated. It keeps me relevant, and it keeps me creative. I like to be creative. You know. Like to continue to make music.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you got to follow your own muse. I think it's really important to be honest with yourself and make music that you love and stay true to your what you love. Because nobody, I mean, you know, for me personally, I would hate for someone to hear me and go, that sounds... Or if I was playing and someone says, oh, well, that sounds like Matheny, or that sounds like, George Benson. I don't never wanted to sound like anyone else, you know, or compose like anyone else, you know. I need to sound like me.
Is there anything you like or you'd like to talk about, but people don't generally give you the opportunity, don't give you the question that maybe deep inside of you, you feel like answering? Something maybe you just want to open yourself, like a side of yours that isn't maybe doesn't have the spotlight that you'd like it to have. I don't know. It's more of a.
And I understand your question.
Yep.
Well, there isn't much that I haven't spoken of that I am honest about and want people to hear when I speak. Well, I would say it would be wonderful if people would really dive into my records and listen more carefully to the compositions, and not be blindsided by the technical sweep and all that stuff. And I'm not going to knock it at all because, you know, the sweep is a huge part of my legacy also. And it's wonderful. And I'm glad that I've been a contributor to the lexicon of guitar techniques. It's a very rare honor.
Very short list.
Short list, yeah. So to me, it's important to listen to the music too. I mean, it's really, I've always said it, and I'll say it again, the music comes first and then the technical, whatever the guitar is secondary to the music.
Coming right so back that's to the beginning of the podcast.
It's a more mature approach to who I am, I think, if you listen deeply to the music.
Yep.
And there's lots to listen to, a lot of albums.
Yeah. So we'll leave it at that, Frank.
Okay, Joao.
Thank you so
much. Thanks for the interview.
Guys, I need to shout out Frank Gambale, guitarschool.com, and his own site, frankgambale.com. I'll leave those links on the description of wherever you're watching this, be it YouTube, Spotify. It's going to be everywhere. But make sure you check out whatever Frank has to offer, not only educational content-wise. So if you're a musician, take a look at that. But also his music, like he said, and he just said. And I'm so grateful for having you here and be able to exchange these ideas and you know, make this connection. I hope you liked it, and I very surely did.
I had fun. Thanks a lot, Joao.
Thank you.
And I look forward to maybe next time.
Yes, I hope that happens.